Chapter 3, Cat and Mouse. Three standard days later, the refugee ship made planetfall on the Alderaanian colony worlds of Isolde, which Padme had visited several times with Bail Organa and Mon Mothma in her own timeline. According to Obi-Wan and Anakin, both of whom had an almost uncanny knowledge of the hyperlanes in the mid and outer rims, the ship had had to come out of hyperspace almost twice as often as expected for a journey of this length. "The main hyperlanes must be messed up from the fighting," Anakin said. "They're having to make jumps around separatist systems, I bet." He had been trying to get Padme alone since they had arrived, presumably to try and explain. Padme wasn't in the mood for any of his excuses, and had made sure that she was with either Obi-Wan or Captain Rex whenever Anakin was awake. She had been lucky so far. Anakin had spent most of his time sleeping off the after-effects of his extended force use, which otherwise seemed to manifest itself in blinding headaches and sudden nosebleeds. Only in the past day or so had he been able to stay awake for more than a few hours at a time, though the headaches seemed to have stopped, at least if Anakin's pained expressions were anything to go by. They disembarked with the rest of the refugees at the capital city's central spaceport, with several thousand refugees on board the Queen Brea, named for an Alderaanian queen several generations ago, not for Bail Organa's wife. Padme had been hoping that she and her companions would be able to simply lose themselves in the chaos, but instead she was dismayed to see that there were several security cues to get out of the main hangar. Rex cursed when he saw them. So far, they had been able to tell, through judicious perusal of the holonet on Padme's datapad, that at least a portion of the Separatist army was made up of Fett clones from Kamino. Whether they had been acquired under the same mysterious circumstances that the Republic's clone troopers had been was a matter that yet remained up to debate. What that meant, however, was that of the four of them, three were likely to be recognized in Republic space. Only Anakin seemed likely to have complete freedom of movement, and for all Padme knew, they would step outside the spaceport and find wanted holoposters with his picture on them broadcast on every flat surface. Anakin straightened up to peer over the heads of the crowd as they were directed toward the leftmost queue. "They're sentience," he said. "We can, well, Obi-Wan can, mind trick them if we have to. It's fine." Obi-Wan gave him a sharp look. Anakin shrugged and pressed two fingers to his forehead, wincing. "I always thought all those masters who used to talk about burning out were just alarmists," he said. "Turns out they were right." "I could have told you that," Obi-Wan said dryly as they shuffled forward. "In fact, I did. On multiple occasions." "That will teach you to overextend yourself."
"I'm sorry, Master. I guess next time I'll just trust you to keep us from being crushed to death. Or blown up. Or shot."
"Don't be impertinent," Obi-Wan said, but he was smiling slightly. "It might do you good to go without using the Force for a while." Anakin clenched his fist.
"Not if you ever want to get out of this freak show."
"I'm horrified to learn that two Knights of the Jedi Order would bicker like children," Padme interposed, though in reality this was like finding out that the sky on Naboo was blue. She knew them both too well to be surprised by anything they did anymore.
"Well, almost anything."
Anakin turned one of his blinding smiles on her, looking hopeful, while Obi-Wan merely rolled his eyes and shifted the pack he was carrying on his shoulder. Padme opened her mouth to add something else, and was briefly distracted by the memory of that other Amidala, that other Obi-Wan, and the desperate way he had clung to her. "You'll stay?"
"I'll stay."
Obi-Wan glanced at her and frowned. And Padme belatedly remembered that he could read, if not her mind, then at least her surface thoughts. She busied herself by reaching up to fumble with the water-stained silk headscarf she was wearing, averting her eyes from both Jedi and focusing on the Alderaanian flag hung on the back of the hangar instead. Slowly, they inched toward the front of the queue. There were more guards present than she thought usual, uniformed in Alderaanian colors. Although they carried blasters, they seemed friendly enough, stopping occasionally to chat casually with the various refugees in line. Padme didn't know if this was some kind of minor force trick, or just Anakin's glare, but none of the guards troubled them. When they finally reached the kiosk at the front of the queue, the Twi'lek woman barely glanced at them. "Adent chips," she said, her voice made a little tinny by the speaker. She was separated from them by a thin pane of transparent steel, which Padme personally thought wouldn't do much against blaster fire. Obi-Wan raised one finger. "You don't need to see our identichips," he said. "Everything is in order. We are completely harmless." The Twi'lek blinked once, slowly. "I don't need to see your identichips," she repeated. "Everything seems to be in order." "We can go now," Obi-Wan prompted. "You can go now," said the Twi'lek. "Welcome to Isolde. Once you're outside, there are signs directing you to the Refugee Relief Center. Just ask anyone if you need help." "Thank you," Obi-Wan said politely. "You've been very helpful." They almost made it out of the spaceport without being stopped. Padme was beginning to think that they had managed it, when three Alderaanian guards appeared almost out of thin air, accompanied by a floating security droid, and blocked their passage. Anakin and Rex stiffened immediately, both of them starting to reach for their concealed weapons, before Padme said brightly, "Is there a problem, officers?" The guard, who seemed to be in charge, he had a yellow sergeant's patch on his sleeve, looked her up and down, apparently dismissed her as a possible threat, and said, "Sorry, ma'am. Your friend here pinged on her security sensors. He'll have to come with us for now." He indicated Obi-Wan, who gave him the most innocent look Padme had ever seen on him. "There must be some mistake." "Sorry, sir. This shouldn't take long." "I'll come too," Anakin began, as Obi-Wan stepped forward. The sergeant gave him a warning look. "That won't be necessary." "I'm sure that this is just a mistake," Obi-Wan said quickly. "It's all right. I'll meet you later at the refugee center. Stay with Rex and Padme." Anakin hesitated, which made the guards shift uneasily, their hands going close to their blasters. Padme stepped between them, laying a hand on Anakin's arm. He had his lightsaber up his sleeve. She could feel the unfamiliar curve of the hilt under her palm. "Ben's right," she said, her mind blanking for only an instant before she remembered the code name Obi-Wan usually used for his undercover assignments. "It must be a mistake. Let's not make any trouble, all right, Ani?" After an achingly long moment, he nodded, and Padme let go of him quickly. Obi-Wan shifted his pack off his shoulder to hand over to her. Then, to her considerable surprise, leaned down to brush a kiss over her mouth. He gripped her wrist lightly as he did so. She almost dropped his lightsaber in surprise when she felt him press it into her hand. "I'll see you soon, my dear," he said, stepping back. For a moment, all Padme could do was stand there, holding his lightsaber hilt in one hand as she pulled down her sleeve to cover it. Obi-Wan allowed himself to be let off by the trail of guards. The security droid zoomed off to recommence its duties.
"That's not good," Rex observed.
"No," Padme said, finally turning around. Anakin looked deeply unhappy, but she couldn't tell if it was because of Obi-Wan or because of the kiss.
No, it's not. Here.
She stepped close enough to pass Anakin the lightsaber, which he accepted automatically before realizing what it was and scowling down at it. He slid it quickly inside his shirt, fumbling for a moment before he apparently got it where he wanted it to be.
I hope Obi-Wan doesn't end up wanting this, he said.
Don't worry, ma'am, Rex told Padme after a moment. General Kenobi does this all the time.
Anakin rolled his eyes.
What do you think I'm worried about?
Bail Organa paused in the doorway of his office, looking back at it. Alderaan, as one of the oldest systems in the Republic, raided offices in the Senate building itself, rather than being shuffled off to the Senate annex or to the overflow offices. Bail was only the latest in a very long line of Alderaanian senators to occupy this suite.
He might very well be the last.
He let the door slide shut, then activated the security system and went to join his bodyguards and his aides, who were waiting in the anteroom. All the art had been taken off the room's walls, the imported furniture covered with plastic sheeting. Bail had brought it with him from Alderaan when he'd come to replace the previous senator. But unlike the art and his files, there was no way to get it out of the office without alerting the Senate Guard, who were undoubtedly reporting straight back to Dooku. Alderaan's junior representative had already departed Coruscant a few days ago, under the pretext of a family emergency. His bodyguards, all members of the Alderaan Royal Guard rather than the Senate Blues, waited patiently. Bail looked around the room, taking in everything he had spent the past 10 years working for, and then said,
"All right, I'm ready. Let's go."
Without any better ideas of what to do while waiting for Obi-Wan to be released, Padme knew that he was capable of talking himself out of nearly anything. Hopefully this wouldn't be one of the rare exceptions. They made their way to the refugee center. They hadn't meant to go, since that meant they'd be on official record. But if they went anywhere else, Obi-Wan might not be able to find them once he was released. Or escaped. It wasn't a long walk, especially since they didn't have much in the way of luggage to bother with. Once outside the busy spaceport, they followed the signs several blocks to the refugee center, which turned out to be a massive complex of half a dozen interconnected buildings, now bustling with volunteers and incoming refugees. Padme and the others joined the first queue they saw, but even then didn't have to wait long before they were at the front, where a cheerful Togruta was giving out leaflets and making room assignments. "I'm afraid that we don't have any identichips," Padme said, in answer to her question, treading heavily on Anakin's foot when he started to reply. "I thought that I'd grab them when we had to leave Echo Station, but I must have been mistaken. Or I lost them on the ship. There were any number of thieves there." "That's all right, dearie. You're not the first," said the Togruta. "Now, what did you say your name was?"
They had talked about this.
"I'm Padme Hardeen, and this is Anakin Tano and Rex Gunner. There's one more, my husband Ben, but he was held back by Space Force security. He'll be all right, won't he? They won't hurt him." "There's always a few, thanks to those newfangled security drones," the Togruta said kindly. "Blasted things are always making mistakes. Most likely he'll be free before nightfall, as soon as they work out he's not some separatist spy or a bounty hunter on the run from the Hutts or whatever it is they're worried about these days. You'll have to go to a consulate to get your identities replaced. Where are you from originally, dearie?"
"Tatooine," Anakin said. When she looked blank, he added, "It's on the Outer Rim, in Hutt space. I don't think Jabba has a consulate anywhere in the Republic. I'm not sure he even grasps the concept."
"Oh dear, I wouldn't expect so," said the Togruta. She looked concerned for a moment, then shrugged and said, We can issue temporary identships just as soon as your husband gets back. And that will last you for a few months while you apply for official refugee status from the government, if that's what you want. Just sign this, dearie. Padme scrawled something that hopefully approximated her assumed name. Now, will you be wanting to stay here? There usually aren't any same-day transports out, I'm afraid, but there are always independent fighters about. There are some hotels in town, too, if you have the money, but I don't suppose... Padme shook her head. We've got a little, but I think we'd probably better save it. Of course. I can put you in one of the women's dorms, or if you'd rather share a room with your men... She winked solemnly at Padme, a grin tugging at the corners of her painted mouth. Padme resisted the urge to grin back. I'll take the room. They get into such trouble when I leave them on their own.
Hey!
Anakin protested.
Well, this one does, Rex said.
Not you too, Rex. Padme ignored him, taking the key card that the woman handed her, along with a map of the complex. What about my husband? I'll put a note in the system for when he arrives, said the Chakruta. What did you say his name was? Ben Hardeen, Padme said, spelling out the surname for her. The Chakruta typed something on her keyboard, then looked up at Padme and smiled. There you go, dearie. He's in the system now, and whoever checks him in will let him know where you are. Don't worry. I'm sure that PortSec won't keep him too long. I hope not, Padme said, tucking the key card into the pocket of her jacket. He's the only one who can keep this one in line.
Anakin made a face, pained, and Padme elbowed him comfortably in the ribs as the Chakruta laughed.
They made their way out of the crowd gathered at the front of the complex, and inside, Padme peering doubtfully at the map. They eventually found the building they were assigned to, squeezing into a lift alongside a chattering Alina family, and spilling out onto the 12th floor. The room was small, with 4 bunk beds and a shared refresher down the hall. Padme sat down on one of the beds and said, Obi-Wan will be all right, won't he?
He does this sort of thing all the time, Anakin said, prowling restlessly around the tiny room.
Did you seriously have to tell her you were married to Obi-Wan instead of me?
I thought it seemed more believable that I would be worried about a missing husband than a friend, Padme snapped. There's no need to be jealous.
He scowled at her, realized that he was doing so, and turned away.
Rex just looked embarrassed at being caught in the middle of a marital spat.
If Padme was in this room for an instant longer, she thought, she would end up punching Anakin in the face. She had never thought of herself as a particularly violent person, but all she could feel when she looked at Anakin was overwhelming rage. Even if he hadn't meant to, he'd killed them. He'd destroyed the Republic and the Jedi and everything he had sworn to protect. It might have been Palpatine's hand on the kill switch, but he never would have used it if it hadn't been for Anakin.
She pushed herself to her feet, seeing Anakin's gaze flick toward her.
I'm going for a walk.
I'll go with.
She leveled a glare at him. And he stopped mid-sentence.
After a moment, he said,
Rex can go with you.
Fine, Padme said, since it was easier than arguing.
Anakin dropped down on one of the beds. He looked tired, worn thin. Burned out, Obi-Wan had explained to her. He damaged the parts of his brain that handled force energy, and they were healing slowly. For an instant, Padme's heart ached to go to him. Then the memory of what he had done caught up with her, and she turned away, shoving her hands into her pockets.
Come on, Captain, she said. Let's have a look around.
Rex was quiet as they made their way out of the complex.
Even in civilian clothes, he walked like a soldier, something about his gait lighter, as though he was used to compensating for the bulk of his armor and the weight of his weapon. His gaze flicked constantly side to side,
wary for potential threats. "Captain Rex?" Padme asked, after they had been walking for about 10 minutes, making their way down a street that ran parallel to the one they had taken from the spaceport. "May I ask you something? I suppose it's a little personal." He seemed surprised by the question. "Of course, m'lady. Anything." "Back in the Senate building. Back on Coruscant, in her own timeline." She was mildly surprised to find that she could say that with a straight face. "When the Supreme Chancellor gave the order for command word retribution, all of the other clones reacted immediately. Even Obi-Wan's commander."
"Cody,"
Rex put in, his face clouding briefly. Padme nodded. Commander Cody had been with her in the mining complex on Mustafar, pinned down beside her as Vader's commando droids cut through the blast doors. She had liked him. "But you didn't. You held him off long enough that Obi-Wan could take care of Commando Appo and his squad, and you were still fighting the command when Obi-Wan knocked you out. Why were you able to do that and none of the others?"
"I don't know, m'lady."
He was quiet for a moment.
"We're not trained to think, ma'am. We're trained to obey orders without hesitation. So a lot of the time, we don't have to think. A lot of the generals don't want us to, even though that's what makes the difference between us and the battle droids. The Kaminoans definitely don't like it. They terminate clones who think too much."
"I didn't know that," Padme said. Rex shrugged.
"They have a point, ma'am. That's the problem with the Jedi. Some of them think too much. In this life, thinking too much can get you killed. You're supposed to act, not compose a poem about it."
He raised a hand to rub at his forehead, as if remembering the command.
"I've met a few clones who've been able to walk away from the army. A traitor once. A saboteur who betrayed us to the Seps. And a deserter with a family of his own. We can think. We're not droids. We can betray our programming."
"It's not programming," Padme said. "You're people." He glanced at her in surprise.
"Most beings don't see it like that, m'lady. Even some Jedi don't. I've served with some who don't. Not General Skywalker or General Kenobi, though. They always treat it as right."
He swallowed, touching his forehead again.
"I can't believe General Kenobi got it out of my head. I thought I'd have to eat my blaster to make it stop."
"Obi-Wan and Anakin wouldn't have let that happen," Padme said, but she couldn't hide her shiver at the thought. Command word retribution had ordered the clones to assassinate not only their Jedi commanders, but also the entire Senate and an unknown number of planetary leaders. She hoped Queen Jamilia of Naboo and Queen Brea of Alderaan hadn't been among them. It was a small, selfish hope, and probably vanishingly unlikely. But hope was all Padme had right now. Rex shrugged again, matter of fact.
"The General can't control everything. Someday he'll even figure that out."
"I think he already has." They stopped at a corner, watching several speeders zoom by as they waited for the light to change so that they could cross. After a moment, Padme said, hesitantly, "I don't know much about the clones, Captain, but are you lonely? You're used to being with the rest of your men, aren't you?"
"Yes, ma'am." His face went sober. "I hope the rest of my boys are all right, but retribution? They would have gone for Admiral Yularen."
Padme put a hand over her mouth. She didn't know Wolf Yularen well, but she had met him on several occasions, and both Anakin and Obi-Wan had always spoken highly of him. "I wish..." Never mind. Rex dropped his gaze, studying the battered pavement.
"So do I, m'lady."
The light on the crosswalk flipped from red to green, and they made their way to the opposite side of the street, passing a group of Twi'lek schoolgirls giggling over the display on a handheld holoprojector. Padme slipped her hands into her pockets, feeling the reassuring weight of the holdout blaster she carried as a matter of course. She should have left it behind with Sabe. Please, please let her be safe. Let them all be safe. When she had been summoned along with Anakin and Obi-Wan to meet the Supreme Chancellor, but the fact that she was still wearing it had completely slipped her mind. Not that it would have helped. I probably would have just shot Anakin. She nearly had at that. M'lady, Rex said, suddenly. Padme looked up, distracted. They'd walked into one of the city's several central squares, which, like the others they had passed, had a holoprojector set up in the center. Unlike the others, this one was on, transmitting a holonews feed from Coruscant.
Concluded negotiations with the ruling council of Kamino, outbidding the Confederacy of Independent Systems for the next shipment of clone troopers. Although the recently created Grand Army of the Republic will continue to be augmented by volunteer troops and Trade Federation battle droids, the core of the army will be made up of clones. The Senate also announced that Jedi Knights will be acting as generals in this army, with ultimate command falling to the Jedi High Council and Supreme Chancellor Dooku, himself a former Jedi Master.
"Blast," Padme said softly, as she and Rex settled next to a storefront to watch. Maybe Obi-Wan's right and some things are certain. Rex shook his head. Brothers fighting brothers. That's not good.
In other news, new bounties of 300,000 Republic credits each have been issued for Separatist leaders Queen Amidala and Obi-Wan Kenobi by the Galactic Senate. This brings the total bounty on both Amidala and Kenobi up to nearly 1 million credits each. The largest are guaranteed by the Trade Federation.
Padme turned away, reaching up to draw her headscarf up over the lower half of her face. We've got to get Obi-Wan away from Portsec before someone makes the connection, if they haven't already.
Maybe you shouldn't be out in public, m'lady, Rex suggested cautiously, as they left the square and started back toward the spaceport.
I'm fine, Padme said. I'll bet you anything you like that every photo of Amidala shows her with the royal face paint, which is designed to obscure your features. I would if I was her. I did when I was queen. She added, frowning beneath the scarf. She had been happy to step down from the office, but Amidala had stayed on the throne, defying Naboo's constitution.
Unless they had changed it, the way they had offered to for her.
And the Naboo Constitution allowed the monarchy to revert to hereditary status under rare circumstances. She can't want that, Padme thought, lengthening her stride. I never would.
But Padme would never turn on the Republic, either.
Mace Windu clearly wasn't happy. He was too good of a Jedi to pace, but there was a faint, anxious angle to his folded hands that betrayed the urge. It was mirrored in the other Jedi that had accompanied him to the Supreme Chancellor's office, Ki-Adi Mundi and Adi Gallia, both of whom were watching Dooku with eagle-eyed attention.
"Putting bounties on Amidala and Kenobi doesn't look good," Windu said. "It's all right for the Federation or for the other commerce guilds, but the Jedi are above that. We don't deal with bounty hunters."
"The Jedi didn't place the bounty," Dooku pointed out dryly.
"The Senate did. They voted on it."
"Doesn't the Senate have better things to concern itself with right now?" Adi Gallia said. "Obi-Wan Kenobi is a Jedi problem. Most bounty hunters aren't capable of dealing with him. And those that are won't do business with the Republic."
"At the moment, the Jedi don't seem particularly capable of dealing with Kenobi either," Dooku said.
"At least if Master Unduli's and Master Koth's fate are any indication.
Let the bounty hunters harry Amidala and Kenobi for a time. The Jedi have another task.
The Jedi still believe that capturing Amidala and Kenobi is the quickest way to end this conflict,
Windu said.
The Jedi fail to recognize that this war has already spread beyond Amidala and Kenobi.
This is where I and the Jedi part ways, my old friends, Dooku said.
We are at war, Masters. You must realize that. There are bigger things at stake than one rogue Jedi.
Windu glanced at his colleagues, then leaned forward in his seat, his elbows resting on his knees.
It isn't merely that Obi-Wan is a rogue Jedi. At best, he's become a gray Jedi. At worst...
You think that he has gone to the dark side? Dooku asked.
Two Jedi are dead, Chancellor, said Ki-Adi-Mundi. Obi-Wan was a promising Padawan, but he hasn't been a member of the Order for more than a decade. He should not have been a match for Eeth Koth and Luminara Unduli.
I saw Master Koth Solovid. Kenobi and Amidala seem to have the matter well in hand.
Dooku's mouth tightened for an instant. Perhaps you rate your Jedi too highly, Master Mundi. This is not the first time we have had this conversation.
No, it isn't.
Windu straightened up.
About 10 years ago, after Obi-Wan had already left the Order, he came to us with a story. He told us that a Sith Lord, the master of the one he killed on Naboo, had approached him and offered to make Obi-Wan his apprentice. Obi-Wan refused. Or, at least, he told us that he did.
You think he lied?
At the time, Windu shook his head.
No. We didn't think that he had any reason to lie. After Naboo refused Senate aid, he and Queen Amidala had their hands full with the recovery. This is before we started hearing rumors about the separatist movement. He and Amidala were on Coruscant to testify during Nuke Gunray's trial.
Dooku nodded. He had been there too, though as a spectator rather than as a witness.
He remembered Kenobi as Amidala's shadow, a compact, handsome young man, in civilian clothes and a lightsaber.
Qui-Gon Jinn's lightsaber, on his hip.
When he had spoken, his voice had been pure Temple Coruscanti, each word smooth and precise, with a Jedi's impassive and impressive summary of events. The Trade Federation lawyers had done their best to tear him apart in the stand. A Jedi Padawan who had chosen to walk away from the Order wasn't usually trusted by anyone, no matter what his motives for doing so had been.
Did you investigate Kenobi's claims?
We couldn't, Adigalia said. Unfortunately, Queen Amidala hasn't allowed any Jedi on Naboo since we finished our investigation into Qui-Gon Jinn's death. She refused to lift that restriction for a second investigation when we made the request. Obi-Wan didn't want us on the planet either. He said that the Sith Lord had contacted him via hologram. Obi-Wan tried to track the holonet signal, but it had been bounced across half the relays in the mid-rim and expansion region, and the closest he could get was probably somewhere in the core worlds, but he wasn't even sure about that. In the interest of trying to find out the Sith Lord's identity, Obi-Wan actually went to the rendezvous on Mustafar, but apparently it was not what he was hoping for.
Dooku raised his eyebrows.
Obi-Wan blew it up, Windu clarified. We checked out the remains later, but he bombed it from the air and there wasn't much left. All he could tell us was that the Sith Lord was a human, or near-human male, cloaked and hooded the entire time, and that he called himself Darth Sidious. At the time, he claimed to have a number of Republic senators under his sway, which he apparently thought might convince Obi-Wan to join him.
Why Kenobi? Dooku asked. Just because someone leaves the Order doesn't mean they're susceptible to the dark side.
Kenobi left for love. Or political idealism, it's always been hard to tell which.
Windu frowned.
Were you approached? The Supreme Chancellor stared at him.
We were talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi,
not me.
Obi-Wan seemed to think that this Darth Sidious was impressed by the fact that he killed Darth Maul, Ki-Adi-Mundi said in his curiously light voice. Murder is and always has been the preferred form of advancement among the Sith, after all. Perhaps he saw it as an invitation. He wasn't lying, Adi Gallia said. At least we sensed no untruth from him when he told us. He was concerned enough about it to come to the temple and inform the entire council in person. I was never told about any of this. You had already left the Order and you weren't Chancellor yet, Windu said. It was none of your concern.
You say that so often, I could almost start to believe that you mean it, Dooku said. Why tell me now?
Because we've been acting as though Obi-Wan is still a Jedi, or at least keeping to his own interpretation of the code, said Windu.
He isn't. We already knew that he was dangerous. He may be Sith as well. Only the Jedi should deal with him.
The Jedi are paranoid, Dooku said dismissively. Maul was a freak. A well-trained one, but a freak nonetheless. If there were more Sith, they would have revealed themselves by now. I know. I looked.
The three Jedi looked at him in surprise.
You never spoke of this, Windu began.
Why should I have, my old friend? Qui-Gon was dead. The Jedi failed him. His apprentice was lost. The Jedi failed him, too.
Dooku spread his hands.
Since Qui-Gon's death and Obi-Wan's loss, the Jedi have jumped at shadows. I saw no reason to encourage this, especially when I found nothing.
Shadows? Said Ki-Adi-Mundi. Is that what you believe? There is a darkness in this galaxy like nothing I have ever felt before. A cloud in the Force that has only been growing since the events on Naboo. Even you cannot have missed it, Chancellor.
You are all fools if you think that the Sith are behind the darkness in the galaxy, Dooku said. There is darkness because we are at war. A war that has been brewing since the Jedi and the Senate threw the Naboo to the Trade Federation as a sop. Many innocents will die because of this. You ought to concern yourselves with that, instead of seeing Sith behind every shadow.
Try and concentrate on the real threat, Masters. I will take care of Kenobi.
Padme and Rex were inside of the spaceport, before someone clapped a hand over her mouth and pulled her off the street into a narrow space between two buildings. She squeaked in surprise, the sound muffled, and dug an elbow into her assailant's ribs before Obi-Wan hissed, "It's me," in her ear. He released her, and she turned to stare accusingly at him as she tugged her headscarf down. Rex lowered the blaster he'd pointed at Obi-Wan's head.
"Next time, try saying hello first," Padme said.
He pushed back his hood, revealing a fresh bruise darkening his left cheek.
I didn't want to draw attention.
So you snatched me off the street?
Obi-Wan arched his eyebrows. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
You've been spending too much time with Anakin, Padme said grumpily. Did Portsec let you go?
Not exactly, Obi-Wan said, looking shifty.
He means that he either knocked someone out or mind-jerked them, Rex said.
Or both.
Both, in this case, Obi-Wan allowed.
But they'd already realized who I was and notified Coruscant. By now they'll have gone to the refugee center.
Is Anakin with you?
Padme swallowed.
We left him there. Obi-Wan, we just saw the Holo news. There's a 1,000,000 credit bounty on both of us. Well, the other Amidala and Kenobi.
Yes, I know, Obi-Wan said.
He touched a finger to the new bruise on his cheek.
Where's my lightsaber?
I gave it to Anakin, Padme said. We have to go get him. We're all on record as traveling together, even if he isn't wanted for anything.
That we know of,
Rex said, matter-of-factly. He held one of his blasters out, grip first, to Obi-Wan.
Here, General.
Obi-Wan waved it aside.
That's not necessary. I've got one. Here, by the way.
He passed Padme an Alderaanian-style blaster pistol and a handful of charge packs. She nodded her thanks and put the charges in her pocket, tucking the pistol itself into the back of her trousers, where the fall of her jacket hid it. Having a weapon more substantial than the small holdout blaster immediately made her feel better.
Rex slipped his blaster back into its holster. Let's go get the general, then.
Padme fell into step with Obi-Wan as they made their way through the settlement's back streets.
What happened? Did they say anything?
He shook his head.
Not exactly. They locked me in a room and cuffed me to the table while they combed Coruscant. Plo Koon did a positive identification via hologram, since he is the closest council member to us. He and his Padawan are apparently on their way here right now to take me into custody.
Master Plo doesn't have a Padawan, Padme said, catching on the unfamiliar detail.
Does he?
Not in our universe.
Blast! This was directed at the squadron of Alderaanian guards who had appeared in the street in front of them.
Obi-Wan, Padme, and Rex backed into the shadows behind a garbage bin, waiting until they had passed before darting across the street.
They must have noticed I was gone.
Well, if you knocked out everyone in the PortSec office, probably. Padme frowned.
Why did the security droids recognize you and not me?
She didn't wait for him to reply, already realizing the answer.
Amidala's never appeared in public without her face paint, and the royal face paint is designed to confuse security scans. The Republic droids don't have her... my specs.
That would be my guess, yes, Obi-Wan said. He drew his stolen blaster as they came into sight of the refugee center, holding it down close to his thigh, where it was nearly hidden.
Padme did the same, fitting her hands around the unfamiliar grip of the Alderaanian blaster. She could see the Alderaanian guards at the entrance to the complex, more spread out down the street in a cordon to keep anyone from entering or leaving.
It's too bad we can't calm Bail Organa and ask him to call them off, Padme murmured.
Or you could just ignore them. Anakin stepped off the roof of the nearest building and landed in a crouch on the ground before them, completely unfazed to find himself suddenly the target of three blasters.
Nice going, Obi-Wan.
Don't blame me, blame the security droids, Obi-Wan said, holstering his blaster before catching the pack Anakin tossed at him. Anakin had the other pack slung over his shoulder.
How did you get away?
Sensed them coming, climbed out the window.
There was blood on his face when he must have gotten another nosebleed from the Force use, but he seemed to be in relatively good spirits, considering the circumstances.
This isn't my first Nerf roundup. It's not even the first time this week I've been chased by soldiers.
He turned to Padme.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, she said, a little touched by his obvious concern.
Except for Obi-Wan trying to scare me to death.
What? He looked accusingly around at Obi-Wan, who just shrugged.
Let's not linger, he said, sidestepping the matter. Anakin, I hear you have something that belongs to me?
A good Jedi doesn't have possessions, Anakin said, grinning as he reached into his jacket and pulled out Obi-Wan's lightsaber. He tossed it to Obi-Wan, who caught it easily and slid it in his wrist holster.
We need to find a way to get off-world, he said, preferably as quickly as possible, before Plo Koon and his Padawan arrive.
What did you do now? Anakin hissed, as they started back in the direction they'd come from.
Shared the face of a man who murdered two Jedi, Obi-Wan replied.
Anakin, Master Plo's Padawan, he doesn't have one,
is Ahsoka.
Bail Organa made his unhurried way through the familiar, curving halls of the Senate building, accompanied by his bodyguards and his aides. Since the Senate was still in emergency session, there were hundreds of senators in their buildings, all with their own Senate guard or personal guard escorts, and retinues made of aides, handmaidens, and droids. His passage raised no eyebrows. He was a familiar face in the Senate building, even more so after the declaration of war several days earlier. "Senator Organa!" He turned at the hall, trying to ignore the way his heart stopped to beat when he recognized the speaker.
"Master Windu.
And it's Master Galia and Master Mundi, isn't it? What can I do for you, Master Jedi?" If Windu noticed his sudden unease, he made no indication of it.
"We've just received disturbing news from one of the Alderaanian colony walls in the Mid-Rim," he said. "I meant to contact you later once Plo Koon and his Padawan had landed, but since you're here now..."
"What kind of news?" Bail asked. It was Ki-Adi Mundi who answered, in his mellifluous voice. "A fugitive in whom the Jedi have a special interest snuck onto the planet aboard one of your humanitarian aid ships. He was identified by a spaceport security sensor droid and taken into custody by PortSec, but his companions managed to escape. We've dispatched the nearest knight to take over the investigation and bring them all back to Coruscant for questioning." Bail felt some of the tension in his shoulders release.
"I see. And you're telling me because..."
"A courtesy notification," said Windu. "Isolde is an Alderaanian possession, but this fugitive comes under Jedi jurisdiction."
"I see,"
Bail said again.
"I don't suppose you can tell me who he is. If there's a dangerous criminal on the loose in Alderaan colonial space, the Queen and I would prefer to know about it."
"I'd rather wait until Master Koon has made a positive ID in person, rather than via hologram, but we'll keep you apprised," Windu said. He glanced at Bail's retinue.
"Going somewhere, Senator?"
"Flying visit back to Alderaan," Bail said.
"Personal matters."
Windu nodded.
"I'm surprised you're leaving while the Senate's still in emergency session."
"Normally I wouldn't, but my wife's health is fragile, and I'd rather be with her until the worst of it passes. The Senate can trundle on without me for a few days."
"Ah,"
Windu said, understanding passing across his face.
"Give my best wishes to Queen Brea, then. I won't keep you any longer."
Bail smiled.
"Thank you, Master Windu. Good luck with your fugitive. What is it you Jedi say? May the Force be with you."
"And with you, Senator." They took shelter in a small, smoky caravanserai, not far from the spaceport, which by the look of it mostly catered to the itinerant spacers that used the planet as a stopover, or jumping-off point, rather than to the Alderaanian employees at the refugee center, or the refugees themselves. The Aqualish proprietor barely even glanced at them after Obi-Wan paid for a crib near the back, and several pots of a savory-smelling meat in some kind of sticky red sauce. Anakin barely managed to eat two bites before falling asleep again, with his head on Obi-Wan's shoulder.
"He will get better, won't he?" Padme asked,
rescuing the pot from his lap and fixing the lid back on. It was self-heating, warm to the touch, and she set it carefully aside for Anakin to eat when he woke up. Obi-Wan touched a fingertip lightly to Anakin's forehead.
"Yes," he said after a moment. "But it could take weeks, even months, for him to get back up to full strength. Anakin's never burned himself out like this before, but he's still alive, so he should recover eventually."
Padme froze, with her hand on the stack of cloth-wrapped flatbread they'd been given along with the meat.
"What do you mean, alive? Could this kill him?"
"No," Obi-Wan said instantly, a little too quickly for comfort. At her expression, he added after a moment,
"Excessive force use can kill a Jedi. But if Anakin had overdone it that badly, he would already be dead. The parts of his brain that allow him to manipulate the Force were badly damaged when he used the Ouroboros to bring us to this universe.
but I can sense that they're beginning to heal. The physical damage is because he burned through his own reserves of power, so his cells began to consume themselves. For a lack of a better description, even the Jedi aren't entirely certain exactly how burnout works, just that it does. He fumbled in his pack for a moment, then pulled out Anakin's cloak and draped it over his partner's shoulders. I've seen it happen before, usually to healers on the front, but there are knights who have burned themselves out in a last stand to take the enemy with them. His mouth tightened for an instant. "But Anakin will be all right," Padme asked, focusing on that. Obi-Wan nodded. "Eventually, as long as he doesn't try to push himself too soon. He can still sense the Force. He just can't manipulate it without injuring himself. That's a good sign." For a moment, his face darkened. "I know a knight who burned herself out so badly that she destroyed her connection to the Force. She killed herself a week later." Swallowing back her dismay, Padme tore a piece of flatbread in two and dipped one half into the sauce. "What about you?" He blinked.
"Me?"
"You held the ceiling up when Palpatine's bombs went off in the Senate," Padme said, a little uncertainly. "And you undid the mental trigger in Rex, and that was all less than 24 hours after the battle on Mustafar. Are you all right?" Obi-Wan took a bite of his meat and chewed slowly. "I'm tired," he said finally. "But I've been tired for months now. That was just strain on top of strain. And undoing the trigger, I've never done that before, and I'm not much used to doing things that require delicacy instead of brute strength these days. I'm tired, and my reserves are near empty. But I didn't try anything like what Anakin did." He frowned at the Ouroboros, just visible beneath Anakin's sleeve. "If I have to, I can try using the blasted thing, but there's a better than even chance I'll burn myself out entirely if it works at all. I have more control than Anakin, but less raw power." It was the kind of technical detail about the Force that Anakin had never offered her, but which meant almost nothing to Padme as it was. She folded some chunks of meat and sauce in the remaining half of her flatbread, but didn't eat it yet. "Back on Coruscant, and on the Resolute on her way back to Mustafar, you were..." She saw him wince before she had even finished the sentence. "I was losing control. That didn't have to do with burnout. I was just..." He shook his head. "Tired?" Padme offered.
"Tired. Yes."
He ran a hand through his hair.
"Usually no one over the rank of Padawan slips up like that. Before Odrin, I hadn't had an accident like that since I was a youngling, years ago."
"What happened then?" Obi-Wan winced again.
"I blew out part of the temple power grid. I was 8. I don't even remember what triggered it, let alone how I did it."
He hesitated for an instant.
"If you didn't mention any of that to Anakin, I'd appreciate it."
Padme nodded, finally starting to eat again.
"You're handling all this very well," Obi-Wan offered.
"I thought about having hysterics, but I don't know what that would accomplish," she said. "I also thought about slapping Anakin around the face, but I'd feel terrible about doing that while he's unwell."
"I can't deny that I've never thought about smacking some sense into him myself, but all the hits he's taken from Grievous and Dooku sadly prove that it doesn't have much effect," Obi-Wan said.
Padme sighed.
"All the time he was missing, after the Jedi Council reported him killed in action on Odrin, all I could think about was how badly I wanted him back. And now he's back, and all I can think about is how much I wish he'd stayed gone. I love him, Obi-Wan, but what he did..." Obi-Wan's face went shadowed.
Anakin was not the one who killed all those people, Padme. They wouldn't be dead if he hadn't murdered the Supreme Chancellor, Padme said. Obi-Wan, he does this. He acts without thinking. He kills people.
Obi-Wan's head shot up so quickly she heard his spine pop.
What do you mean?
Padme was beginning to regret bringing it up at all.
You know what I mean. Anakin's always been rash.
Yes, I'm aware. I've been with him for the past 13 years. I think I know him at least as well as you do. His voice had gone cool.
You're referring to something specific. Does it have to do with Tatooine? With his mother?
Padme put her bowl down.
It isn't my story to tell.
Obi-Wan's face was like carved stone.
I see.
He might have said something else, but then the crib's door slid open, and Captain Rex put his head inside. Anakin blinked, straightening up as though he'd just drifted off for an instant.
Generals, Senator, Rex said. I think I might have found us a way off this rock.
Bail and his retinue made it all the way to the Alderaanian senatorial sky dock without incident, where the Tantive IV was waiting for them, its engines already primed and ready to go. Bail made his way to his stateroom, now packed with boxes of data chips containing the files that had previously filled his office in the Senate building, along with most of the contents of his 500 Republica apartments. They'd moved everything out a little at a time. Any casual visitor to the suite wouldn't notice a difference unless they looked at his closets. He touched a finger to the blinking comlink control by the door as he entered the room.
Yes?
We're ready to depart, Senator.
Very well, Bail said. Let's not linger. Let me know before we enter hyperspace. He sat down at his desk and opened up his datapad, tapping in his security code to access the Special Operations Bureau's systems. Beneath him, he felt the ship shudder and begin to hum as the Tantive IV lifted off. As Senate liaison to the Special Operations Bureau, he was one of only half a dozen individuals who had the master codes to the SOB systems. Bail knew that there were files he didn't have access to. He was certain that both the Jedi and the Supreme Chancellor kept back data that the SOB should have had. But it was probably one of the most complete intelligence archives in the Republic, rivaled only by those of the Jedi Temple. Bail scrolled through the most recent editions, noting that whatever had happened on Isolde hadn't made its way into the SOB files yet. His comlink blinked again.
Senator, we're in orbit and we're ready to make the jump to hyperspace.
Bail slid a data chip out of his pocket. He looked at it for a long moment, then slid it into his data pad, waiting for the icon to come up on the screen. He'd had a talented slicer friend with no love for the Republic come up with this program for him.
Senator Organa?
Send data burst Fox 1776 back home, Captain, Bail said.
He waited for the acknowledgement that the communication had been sent, then tapped the icon to send the engineered computer virus crawling through the Special Operations Bureau's systems. They'd know it was him who sent it, but by the time they figured that out, it would be too late.
Long live the Queen, he murmured.
And then, loud enough for the comlink to pick up,
take us into hyperspace. With any luck, we won't be coming back anytime soon.
Red flag distribution, red flag distribution, red flag distribution. Override all, override all, override all. Priority Alpha, priority Alpha, priority Alpha. Transmission is live.
Throne Room, Royal Palace of Alderaan, Aldera City, Alderaan 2. Conventionally, Alderaan.
Alderaan System, Alderaan Sector, Core Worlds. Holocamera faces the thrones. Facial recognition. Brea Antilles Organa, Queen of Alderaan, human female. Bael Prester Organa, Prince Consort of Alderaan, Alderaan Senator in the Galactic Senate. Human male, hologram. Mon Mothma, Chandrilla Senator in the Galactic Senate. Human female, hologram. Li Char, King of Dak. Mon Calamari male, hologram. N. Papanoida, Chairman of Runa. Pantora male, hologram. Others. Read more. Queen Brea is seated on her throne, while the Prince Consort occupies his throne via hologram. The other governmental representatives are arrayed around them, six on either side of the thrones, all represented via hologram. Brea. 25,000 years ago, Alderaan became one of the founding members of the Galactic Republic. A Holonet report, many centuries ago, stated that although Coruscant might be the heart of the Republic, Alderaan was its soul. Alderaan has always been loyal to the Republic, but over the past few decades, we have watched with growing unease as the Republic we have served and protected for so long has become corrupted and twisted beyond all recognition. Brea continued. By their actions in recent years, the Supreme Chancellor, the Galactic Senate, the Jedi Order, and the Republic itself have all proven that they are no more than tools of the Commerce Guilds. The Trade Federation, the Banking Clan, and the rest of the Commerce Guilds strike at innocent systems with impunity, destroying the lives, the cultures, and the economies of these planets. The numerous petitions for redress, issued not only by Alderaan but by many other systems as well, have been met only by further injury on the part of the Commerce Guilds. The Senate has not merely been deaf and blind to these injustices. It has gone so far as to support the Commerce Guilds financially and militarily. Brea continued. It is clear to me now that the Republic no longer functions. The trust that we, the people of the Republic, have placed in the Galactic Senate has been truly broken. We can no longer in good conscience continue to support the actions of the Senate, which has proven that it is unfit to be the leader of a free people. Therefore, with great reluctance, I, Queen Brea Antilles Organa of Alderaan, withdraw the system of Alderaan and its extraplanetary possessions and colony worlds from the Galactic Republic. As speaker for the delegation of 2,000 systems, some of whose representatives are here today with us, I also withdraw the systems of the delegation from the Galactic Republic. These systems are absolved of all allegiance to the Galactic Republic, and all political connections between these systems and the Galactic Republic are, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Brea continued. As independent and sovereign entities, the member systems of the Delegation of 2000 have unanimously voted to join the Confederacy of Independent Systems, which has proven by word and deed that it bears only the good of the galaxy at its heart, as the Republic of old once did. Therefore, on behalf of the people of Alderaan and the Delegation of 2000, I pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to the Confederacy of Independent Systems, which I pray will bring sanity and compassion back to the galaxy. May the Confederacy do what the Republic could not.
End transmission. Red flag distribution, red flag distribution, red flag distribution. Override all, override all, override all. Priority Alpha, priority Alpha, priority Alpha. Long live the Queen.